Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Hey, welcome to Momentum Magnet. Today, I'm here with Randy Herbertson, and we're going to talk about all things advertising. I mean, I think one of the biggest questions I get asked when I tell people I worked in corporate America and big ad agencies is it really like Mad Men? How do these people come up with these campaigns? And one of my favorites is, what's it like to be on the set of an ad? And what makes great work? So today I want to talk with Randy and dive into all things advertising, leave you with some tips and tricks on how to activate a better strategy for your creative team, and talk about some of the trends we're seeing that are going to drive success in the next 3 to 5 years. So Randy, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here, Karen.
Great. So you are on the creative side. And for people that aren't as savvy on how the advertising world works, there are people kind of in two camps. The folks that come up with the idea that is what the advertising needs to do, right? Technically the strategy or the account side, and the folks that actually make the things, come up with the concept, make the pretty pictures and write the scripts. How do you describe it to people?
So I don't think they are entirely separate practices.
That's Karen. True.
So the real reality is that those two aren't really joined at the hip. You don't get success. And I always find that, a great creative strategy, and on my team, we call them creative strategists, speaks to both the creative team and the client. So at one level, you have to have the client going, check, check, check. I get it. That makes my brand the proper hero. It has all the right things. And for the creative team, it doesn't become blah, 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 where it is, okay, there's a whole lot of words that I don't know what they mean. I'm going to just do something I think it looks good, right? So it has to work on both ends. We actually like to start our creative work actually with the with a really pretty robust strategy. And if we're dealing with somebody who's never done advertising before, we start with messaging strategy, which really creates their communication code and all the key cues that help lead us not only to create really strategic and beautiful creative work, but puts us in the same language with the client. So when we're describing our work, it is based on the strategy that the client has bought, you know, it's bought into, and we're using the words and the tone and manner that we've described. So that may sound like you're making the creative scientific, but you're not, because it actually frees us to then really explore down an alley that we know we can speak the same language with the client.
Yeah. And I think one of the challenges is that all of the words that we use in marketing to describe different pieces, like a messaging strategy, have thousands of different definitions. Yep. So I agree with you that starting with the sound strategy is always the first place. And frankly, what I see more often than anything else with clients is not that they need more marketing. They actually often need less. They just need a tighter strategy of what they're trying to accomplish, right? A better endpoint. So when you talk about messaging strategy, are you really talking about what are the consumer's needs at their, you know, within their shopping experience or the way that they experience a brand or a service?
Yeah, exactly. And again, it comes down to the words we talk about a lot, the old pain point, right?
Yeah.
What are we solving? And I will tell you that what drives me crazy in the advertising world is beautiful advertising has nothing to do with a client pain point. It's borrowed interest. And people win con awards and all sorts of things. They go, oh yeah, that's gorgeous, but what does that have to do with the bank? What does it have to do right. with, you know, that candy bar? And the ones that are really brilliant, really, even if they do with borrowed interest, come back to that point. So I'm constantly telling my team, and we're communicating with the client, what are we solving here? You know, what's the core thing we're trying to communicate? What are core things we're trying to communicate? And then, you know, with the messaging strategy, if we come up with the words, as well as the visuals that we consistently can say across different platforms, and say them consistently, the consumer will now get that. They'll be in our communication code. They'll know when we say crispy, crispy has a specific meaning for us, right? Or that we, whatever word we happen to use.
Yeah, it's really interesting because when you talk about kind of emotion for emotion's sake, or doing a thematic ad just because you can, and it's a popular topic. I think people that aren't steeped in advertising may not know what we're talking about. Right. So I think a good way to describe that is during the COVID crisis, you probably saw 9,000 pieces of communication that were about like, it's hard, we're in this together.
Yeah.
Right. And you saw that from shoe companies and car commercials and, you know, packaged goods, toothbrushes. And at some point, you know, creatives and strategists ask themselves why.
Right.
Why are we seeing the same ad from 19,000 brands?
Yes. Yes. And so let's be topical, right? Rather than being relevant. And look, that's another adage that I like to say as well, is that the glass half full sells better. You know, so rather than focusing on the negative, because no one wants to be reminded of the negative, what are the positive things coming out of that? So what do we get to do? What do we learn to do? And I think this is one of the biggest lessons coming out of the pandemic era, which is, what are the new things that we're doing now that we want to keep doing? Okay, what are we finding that we can do better in a different way? Because we had to learn how to do it that way. And I think that is great. And if you have that positive spin, then you're giving somebody something they can do forward with rather than go be reminded backwards about.
That's interesting though, because I've had many conversations about that actual theory. Like, what drives response, right? What's the underpinnings of, you know, psychological push-pull? And one of the things I've always landed on is that people spend money to solve problems way more than they spend money to feel better.
Yep, that's right.
So it is that happy balance of the shopping desire or the purchase methodology is usually about righting a wrong, but then the creative execution does better if it leans a little bit more into a positive territory, which can be like very hard to balance.
So using a perfect example to be kind of literal.
Yeah.
You don't want to show some, you know, when someone's selling an aspirin or pain reliever, just showing somebody in huge pain, yes, got it, doesn't really sell that as well as saying, how, this is what I'm going to feel like afterwards. So, you know, so all these things, people feeling good and being better. That thing is, you want to get to the outcome, not the problem. You want to remind them, you want to be there, okay, rather than reminding what you're not. The same thing, you don't see things for, you know, weight remedies just about being overweight. You see them showing about what you can do when you're feeling more active. So I think that's really key. It's not like you're ignoring it, but it's just saying that you're trying to point to the solution. Yeah, and like you said, you know, it's not the opposite.
Yeah, and it all depends on the channel, right? You know, in film, people want that positive takeaway. If you're doing like long form content, you're sending someone an email, maybe you're really trying to emote with them and make them understand that you get the challenge that they're in. So it really matters. And I don't think a lot of people do what you said first enough. They don't think about how you're going to show up a little bit differently in what you say in a text message versus a email versus a radio ad, or, you know, even a newsletter.
That's right. And I think, you know, the thing we think about a lot, and of course, even today, we're doing plenty of advertising on social media, and you don't put the same message in the same way across every platform, because there are people there for different reasons. You know, people that on Instagram because of interest and it's more visual. They're on Facebook for personal stories. They're on LinkedIn for news, you know, same thing with Twitter. So you can have a message that has a theme, but you have to cater it to where you're going to be, even if it's around it. And again, honestly, I'm kind of a fan in general is that more with less. So I get an email even with three paragraphs. I go, oh, it's three paragraphs. I'll get to it. I'll put that in my, you know, read later box versus getting something that's very short and pithy. You know, the hardest thing is to make something shorter than longer, but I think it's important. But it doesn't mean, and something you said before, it's just important. They have to identify first that you get it, right? That you understand where they are, you can identify, relate with it. You just don't want to, I don't think, have to want to dwell on it too much.
No, I agree with that for sure. So when you are thinking about clients these days and kind of watching the world of advertising and marketing, what do you think is the biggest pitfall that clients are making?
Well, the number one is buying into things for the wrong reasons. Like, hiring talent, you know, looking for a celebrity, looking for even an agency, just because you think that is, wow, they're big and that's fancy and that looks exciting, versus choosing things that are the appropriate choices for their needs. And I think also clients a lot of times will be, number one, overambitious to what they can do and try to want to do too many things rather than be focused on doing the right things. And secondly, you know, honestly, we have to work hard with clients to pay attention to the building blocks, right? Because they want to get to the solution. So back to, as I said earlier, it doesn't mean it has to be laborious or painful, but if we agree on the building blocks that gets the solution, by the time we get to the solution, we're talking the same language. So be like,
oh, that is always the problem. I can't tell you how many times I have someone come to me with the channels that they think they need, and yet they cannot articulate clearly what their business goal is and who their target audience is to reach that goal. And I always do the same thing. It's a timeout. I mean, it's this, I always go back to simple philosophies in your own life. If you were to tell me on January 1st this year that you just want to be a better version of you, then literally anything could be argued to be successful in getting to that end.
Exactly.
And if you come to me and say, I want to run, you know, a sub 6 mile in the next 6 months, then we've got a clear plan. I mean, you're going to be working your butt off, but we know what you need to do.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like I said, ultimately, everything we do not only helps inform great creative, it makes our job easier in selling great creative, because we can truly get to the point where, again, we're talking the same language with the client, which hopefully, again, of course, is what's going to talk to the consumer. Then we've won. Another thing I do want to call out too, that is something that we all struggle with as creatives, is teaching our clients how to give us the right kind of critique. Okay. So it's a classic. I always say, don't tell us to make it red. Tell us to make it romantic. Tell us to make it softer. Talk to us in adjectives, because clients, you know, many, many clients fall down to wanting to give very tactical direction. And what I always say is that we can give you exactly what you ask for or what we recommend. What would you prefer?
Yeah. And that goes back to this idea of, if you're going to hire an interior decorator to decorate your house, you can tell them you want mid-century modern with like a hint of animal and a thread of internationalism, and they will deliver on that vision. But if you start picking those pieces off of your own style, you're going to end up with a mishmash and it never looks good. Yep. We always talked about, you can have good, fast, or cheap, pick two.
Yep, exactly.
And most people want, you know, all three plus it to be award winning. And it's impossible to put so many handcuffs on the process.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is that they'll look at the end product and go, oh, it's not exactly what I wanted. Yeah. And it's because you said, well, because you told us exactly what to do, and that's what you hired us to do. You know, and so again, in the balance, you know, the way we get around that, of course, is show them what they ask for, then show them what we recommend. And then hopefully what we recommend is, you know, gets closer to seeing why that's better. And look, it doesn't mean they don't have good ideas. Of course, there's sometimes they go, wow, that was a great idea, and we were inspired by it, we did something with it. But just like you said, the other word, which is my favorite word, the vocabulary, which is why. Don't just tell me it's not working for me. Why is it not working for you? That's the most important thing you can tell us. But the second thing is talk in adjectives. So don't, you know, don't talk in red, green, blue, say more romantic, more aggressive, more whatever, because those are words as a creative person I can do something with. And you give me some freedom then, knowing your brand, to then give you my interpretation of what that could be. And it, you know, ultimately then it's also the way you sell it to your whoever you're talking to.
And trusting your vendors is important. I mean, I think you're hiring someone for an expertise that is way deeper than yours. And then to think that you understand more than them is a challenging balance. It's like going into your oncologist and trying to dictate exactly what your treatment protocol should be. Granted, there is some semblance of having an educated client that makes for better work, for sure. Someone that pushes the envelope. Yeah. But there is sort of that give and take. So who's doing the best work right now? And in what category In what market are some examples of some really strong campaigns?
So I think I would point to, it's funny, the category last year during the pandemic, I kind of categorized clients in three places. There were the people that simply went underground and disappeared and said, call us when it comes back. And that was a lot of the CPG category. There was those that got so crazy busy that they had to keep moving and doing new things because they had no choice. And then there was the third group that got slower, but took the time to really step back and think about what they were doing, right? So rather than saying, I'm scared, I'm hiding, I'm going to come out when it's good, they really took the time. And the clients that have done that third thing are doing the best. Because again, I think the people that are doing the best work are recognizing that we are in a changed world now, okay? That certain things, you know, are timeless and we always need them, but we're doing it in a different environment. And it's not because we're now in hardship, it's we learn things, right? We've learned new things. So I think there's a number of people, I would say, in different categories, certainly in the CPG categories, for sure, that have sort of learned that, you know, they learned that, you know, how to make that work better.
Well, I think having both of us having lived through like the crash of the 2000s, again in 2008, you know, in the middle of this last decade, we've had these conversations a lot. When you see a market recession, you have clients panic. And I think I could pull out many, many, many decks about marketing through bankruptcy, marketing through a recession, marketing through a downturn. And it's really important. I mean, actually, the biggest opportunity as a business to grow is when a market contracts.
Yep, exactly. You know, and there's also some really interesting macro trends that are influencing a lot of things. So one of the things that, you know, on the upside that a lot of people started to do because they had time to do was to get more active, right? Oh, wow, I'm working from home. I can actually run a little bit more. I can exercise a little more in the morning. I can, you know, pay attention to what I'm eating a little bit more because I'm not racing to a train or things like that. So that's a sustaining trend because a lot of people saw even the starting point some positive results. So that's a macro trend that a lot of companies are trying to take advantage of as well, because that's the things you can do with. And so it's, and even back to what you said earlier, the more informed person, we all have more time to learn more about things, right? So customers are even more informed. And so that's changing things. Another really interesting change, and we do a fair amount of work in among other things in healthcare, was the meteoric rise of telehealth. Right. Mm-hmm. And telehealth is, you know, which has been around for a while, just obviously took a hockey stick growth last year because we didn't have any choice. And so now all sorts of new businesses are realizing that people are now more conversant and used to doing that and taking advantage of that in their businesses. You know,
not it's interesting. Even the telehealth argument, I work for a large healthcare provider in Massachusetts, and we actually had more telehealth claims for mental health during the pandemic than physical health. Yeah. And it outpaced, you know, our growth trajectory like 100x from what was being predicted and forecasted prior to the pandemic. And that will never change. I mean, if you look at healthcare as an example, that industry had more change in 1 year than it has had in the last 10 to 20.
Yep. Because of this is some of the positive outgrowth of these things. Things are forced to adapt, so they adapt quicker, right? And then once they've adapted, like you said, we're not going backwards. It's now a new playing field that we're now building on top of, you know?
And it's something that we all need to think about as we're going forward and talking to our consumers differently. There is a large part of the population that is home more, right? Has a little bit of more flexibility. And at the same time, that has to be balanced with a more equitable lens when you're thinking about building campaigns. Because I've had a lot of conversations in boardrooms in the last few months about this idea that is the lens at which you're viewing that work equitable?
Right.
Because there are groups that have really experienced a lot of gains, like the white collar Americans that got to work from home for the first time and have better work-life balance were happier. But it is not easy if you were trying to deal with homeschooling and all of this medical concern and you had to be in a warehouse. Completely different world.
Exactly right. And the other piece, which of course we also dealt with in the middle of this, was that George Floyd and the diversity thing. And actually, it's funny, we're literally working on a DEI campaign right now that's been inspired by one that another company did that was so brilliant, because it was DEI really by essence is not just diversity. It's broader than that. It's what everybody's, you know, biases are in the world that come to play in the workplace. And again, that's a learning and a positive outgrowth that's coming out of what was experienced in this past year. So it's not about just that is bad, I'm against that. And so how do we make that good, and where do we move forward? And again, back to the glass half full.
I do feel like that is a positive turn, because I think diversity has been a topic in advertising for a long time, but in a really kind of fake, scratch the surface way, where you would do multi-ethnic casting and you'd spend a lot of time making sure that the actors in the spot were reflective, but in essence, perhaps the situation they were acting in wasn't.
Right. That's exactly right. The old, you know, we used to like say the Benetton quotient. Remember, Benetton was the campaign that always had, you know, the perfect little quota of diversity in it. So it's not about that. It's like you said, being real, being reality about it, to what you, like I said, reflective of the world, right? That's important, or reflective of whatever we're doing, but not artificially in a way that wouldn't make sense.
So when you talk about channel strategies with clients, I'm sure you get a lot of the same questions I do. So people will come to me and be like, I need a podcast, or I need to be doing Facebook Lives every day. How do you deal with the rise of different channels and requests from clients to get involved in them?
It's a really good question, because yes, there's the old classic, oh my God, this is hot, I need to do it. I need to be on TikTok. Everybody's on TikTok. And I'm like, okay, but who is on TikTok? Why are they on that? And is that going to be something where your message is going to make any sense? You know, frankly, I tell people all the time not to use Twitter if they don't have something that's topical, right? Because if it's not topical, you don't belong on there, right? It's about news. It's about topical.
Or if you have a tone. Like, Twitter's really hard to break through if you don't have a tone that's a little bit irreverent or a little bit disruptive or funny.
Yep. And again, there are clients that say, oh, I want to hire that person on Twitter because they've got a great voice. Like, yeah, but why will they be relevant for your brand?
I have to say, I really do believe that the fast food brands have done a really great job with Twitter over the course of the pandemic. I mean, Wendy's specifically, I can think of some really funny instances where talk about getting earned PR by just having like a funny person managing your Twitter account.
Right. Well, again, but they've done a good job of being topical.
They have. That is very true.
If you could be topical, even about something that has a one-day relevance, that's okay. Then it can work on Twitter. If you're just going up there to say something that has nothing to do with anything that has any timeline, why bother? You know, there are better places to be.
Yeah, but brands with realism, right? The authentic voice and feeling like you admit defeat. I think one of the really topical things that came up in the last week was the HBO Max intern email scandal. So you have, you know, an email went out to all of the HBO owners of their channel and it was blank. And everybody was joking on Twitter that it was the intern, and HBO came back and said, yeah, it was the intern, and we're taking great care of them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And again, there's always a way to even take like that, which they didn't do, by the way, and turn that into an opportunity, right? So that's the other big thing. Sometimes when you make a mistake, how does your mistake become an opportunity to do something to show that you're real people, that you you create a recognition that people can chuckle about? Because then again, I got that email. Who cares? I thought it was weird, but I didn't pay much attention, and you knew it was a mistake. It's a lot of times, you know, clients will like want to run away from that and hide from it versus saying, let's use it. Okay. So that was a mistake. How do we turn that into a positive thing?
Yeah. I mean, if they had added the line at the end of their email that said, like, haven't we all made that intern mistake? They didn't add that line, but the internet added that line. And if you watch, you know, the feed, it was full of people from other companies telling hysterical intern and early job mishaps, because everybody's had one.
Yep. Yep. And again, it's, you said earlier, opportunity for earned PR, right? This is totally opportunity we have actually recommended to clients and successfully to do their customer service stuff literally on Facebook or in a very public way, because people love seeing you solve problems.
Totally. Right?
Love seeing you responding. Okay, you had an issue with my product. Great to see that you've solved it. The Amazon does this to some extent as well, but less visibly than elsewhere. But people love seeing that. You love seeing that you've responded and you've said, okay, God, this is what I'm going to do. So
you are so much more likely to share a customer service nightmare that was solved better than you are to talk about a brand that just did a good job.
Yep.
I visited a hotel, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago, that went above and beyond for me when I had small kids in such a way that I still talk about it to this day. Yep. Yep. And those are the moments that brands, you can't pay for, you have to earn them.
Yeah. But again, it's back to, you know, when there's a bad situation, how do you make it a good one? Yeah. You know, my example is we're all been eating outside more. And eating outside maybe too early to eat outside. So my wife and I were eating outside in March, and we were literally in a wind tunnel with a restaurant outside, and we were freezing, and we're not complainers, but clearly we were unhappy. And the manager came up and said, how was everything? And I said, well, it was kind of cold, and he comped our meal and was not expected, didn't ask for it. Right. And we went, wow, that just became a reason to come back. And honestly, we probably would have anyways. We decided to sit outside, but it's doing, you know, making something good out of something bad.
Yeah. I mean, my best hotel story was going to dinner with, you know, small children and having somebody have a tantrum and have to leave, right? Nice restaurant that was planned. And they actually sent the dinner and a stiff cocktail first to my husband of the time back in the hotel room with like a note saying, it gets better, dude. Like, and that was just such a power move. Like, I'll never forget it. It was so kind.
Well, then that's back to understanding, like you said.
Completely.
Too. You know.
Completely. Yeah. And listening. So this is a great, you know, way to segue. One of the things that people do not do enough, and I actually counsel clients that come to us looking for a marketing campaign, when we really stop to say, you don't have a marketing problem, because marketing is really about turning up the volume and the frequency of your sales message, right? You have a consumer experience problem. Right. So I just went through this with two different brands to talk about the fact that they didn't need to amplify their paid search campaign. They actually had to fix one part of the customer experience when they renew their actual account. That was what was broken. And if you put a little effort in fixing that process, you could see a return on investment much more quickly.
So I'm 1,000% agree with you on that. So we talk a lot about the old classic purchase funnel, right?
Right.
It's circular, right? And when you're finding something is broken, something in that funnel isn't working. You know, where's the chink in the armor? And you can really identify it. And that's why, again, back to a good messaging strategy, carries it all the way through. Because you're finding that people are really successful at the getting them in the door, but then they don't do much after that. Or, you know, when you're getting to somebody to renew, they're not spending the same effort as they are or in the same way when they brought you in the front door. So that can make a huge difference.
It does. So if everybody listening has a desire to improve their marketing or their advertising in 2021 and beyond, what's the first question you suggest that they ask themselves?
I think the first question would be what, like we said earlier, what am I solving?
Right.
Okay. What is the positive outcome? What is the before and after? And make it as simple as possible. Okay. And some brands simply have it, but a lot of the brands, it feels fuzzy, especially when you're in a field where there's other people doing what you do. And by the way, not everybody's going to do it completely uniquely. Okay. So you're going to say, oh, I'm doing something no one else is doing. But B, if you have a really clear understanding of what you're doing, what's the before after, that's the first question you have to answer.
Perfect. So if a brand wants to get in touch with your agency to talk about building, how do they do that?
So my website is thevisualbrand.com, and I'm Randy, R-A-N-D-Y, at thevisualbrand.com.
So last question, Randy, how much do you think advertising in 2021 is like Mad Men?
Less drinking, unfortunately. And no smoking.
less drinking, no smoking in cooler offices. You do work in a renovated post office, right?
Yeah, I have a cool office. Yeah, I love to say I love those mid-century offices. Those were pretty cool. Yeah, I want that orange couch. But yeah, I think honestly, if you look at the early days, the way they did it, a lot of it was very similar. The big difference is that we're not using typesetting machines anymore. Yeah, it's a little easier to accomplish what we're doing.
thank goodness. Well, I really thank you for joining us. It's good to talk about advertising and, you know, challenge people to think about the strategy really being the core element for success.
Absolutely.
So thank you. And Randy Herbertson, it was great to have you. And thanks for being here, everyone. We love reviews. Go out and give us, you know, the 5-star review and your comments on wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are going to be taking a summer hiatus and plan to come back in the fall. But thank you so much for listening. And you can find all of our episodes on MomentumMagnet.com. Take care. Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.